Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And it is Feedback Friday. So one of the things that have been vexing me, or I should say me, us, because I know there's a lot of you, because I'm actually working with a few different people that are having to deal with this insidious penetration within the Patriot movement. And so as I was talking, and I did not get Paul Venable's permission to talk about this, but I'm going to go ahead and talk to you about the information he's provided me, because he's in the middle of it down in Missouri, and I know many of you are in many of different states. As a matter of fact, a very good friend of mine who I had no idea got sucked into this, and she was doing, I would just say, constitutional things, not understanding Republic Review. I mean, you know, I get busy, and I don't have the time to sit down with everybody to go through this, and I can't compel anybody to listen to this show. As a matter of fact, I'm the first one to tell you at the beginning of the show, I'm not here to entertain you. As a matter of fact, the content I provide you is content that actually helps you understand the Constitution, places context to who we are as citizens and our obligations, patriots, within this government that was formed by the divine hand of providence that actually wiped away the paradigms of law and government from Britain. And a new government and a new law was instituted. And in the process of creating this new government, there were very specific things that were required for this government to do things legitimately. It didn't mean that the government couldn't do things illegitimately. It meant, if you understand the design of the Constitution, we the people have the responsibility of enforcing and holding government accountable. So what do you do when your child, because that's what our government is, it's our child. What do you do when your child gets so far out of whack that makes such a mess? What do? You just go kill your child and say, okay, that was a good run. No, we've got to clean this up. We have to take responsibility because it's our fault. That's one of the first things I alluded to when I was speaking to the county commissioners, if you haven't seen that presentation. And I apologize for some of the audio and some of the recording, but I am trying to capture the essence of this dialogue, this conversation that we need to have with our public servants, that this is more than just a job. This is more than them just doing the bidding for your state. They are our public servants. They are our warriors. They are our 911 political force. You know, a lot of times as a Marine, we're referred to as the 911 service. You know, whenever there's an emergency, they call in the Marines. Now, whenever there's regarding the special forces and all of that type of stuff. But when it really comes to the United States government responding to, you know, situations that require, you know, a military intervention, 9 times out of 10, they call upon the Marines. As a matter of fact, Reagan and many presidents and leaders have talked about, you know, the heritage of the Marine Corps. Now, I don't want to go down the military rat hole, but the fact of the matter is, folks, that we are a self-government, that the Constitution has placed it upon us to enforce the laws the militia is integral. It is not government's duty. It is our duty. And we have created and woven this into this government. You know, the people could have easily resulted this concept of having a militia and having a self-government, but they realized the beauty of this. And over time, they have taught us to ignore, to be ignorant, and to actually do things that are contrary. So let me get back to this movement, whether it be because as I gave you in the Tory Acts yesterday, or maybe it was 2 days ago, because yesterday we did the Loy Brunson interview. And I've talked about the Tory Act several times, and I mentioned it on Monday, that the Tory Acts really drew the line because it was an inside look of what was going on here in America, how we, the colonists, had gotten to the point, and this was in 1775, where we created the Continental Congress. And the Continental Congress responded as they were forming and getting organized in responding to, you know, because literally the war was beginning. I mean, the shot across the world, you know, the shot heard across the world happened in 1775. And the Declaration of Independence occurred about a year later. Now, without getting into accurate timelines and everything else, the Tory Acts provides us with an insight of this change, the very first step of changing American government from a monarchical government to a republican form of government. Now, when they started creating these shadow governments throughout the states, they had different terms and different names, which is why it's confusing to many of you, because many people thought that these were, you know, and are working with these assemblies or conventions and or councils or committees of safety. Now, they use safety in some of them. They were some just called assemblies. Some were just called councils. Some were just called, you know, boards or what have you. The point is that these people that started forming this shadow government, they actually started working with people and started representing. They didn't actually have elections. They amongst themselves decided who would be representing them at the, you know, county level, state level, and then within the Continental Congress. And so they took it upon themselves. And in this process, they said they needed to create a representative government. This is when John Adams wrote this supposedly eloquent, in his mind, an eloquent thesis on the type of government that needed to be formed in America. And this is what actually, to me, got John Adams a do-over for what he ended up doing in representing the Redcoats that were involved in the massacre. Those few British soldiers who fired and killed a few people. And I believe he actually got them off. But nevertheless, this article that he wrote on it must be a Republican form of government or something like that, this article really helps people understand the importance of a Republican form of government. Now, when they actually started stirring the pot in 1775 on the type of government, they had not really finished. This was a cognitive process, is an evolutionary process, because by the time the Constitution came along, this Republican form of government took on a new form that the world had never seen. It became a government not represented of just the people, but the people and the people's governments. So that when we had a government of the county, and then we created the government of the state would have representation of both the people and the county government. and that was likewise implemented within the U.S. Constitution, or vice versa, technically, because they first implemented this in the U.S. Constitution, where Congress was divided into bicameral legislative bodies. And therefore, moving forward, after the U.S. Constitution was ratified, every state reformed their legislative bodies to be bicameral, to where they gave representation to the people as well as the counties. And as I have told you, when we go through the Enabling Acts here, that the Enabling Acts are the formal acts of how the counties form the states. In other words, when you look at all states that were formed after the original 13, every state that was brought into this union was formed by the authority and the delegation of powers of the county, not of the people, not of a democracy. Now, I know a lot of your ears have been perked in hearing what's going on in Congress, that, you know, it's the epitome of a democracy with what we're witnessing as this struggle. No, what we're witnessing is a debacle and an empirical evidence that we no longer have a representative government, that we have a party form of government. Now, when we come back, I'm trying to help set the stage that you see the shadow government and how we evolved into a superior God-given government of self-government, of how we the people have responsibilities, not just all the freedoms. We will be right back after these two promos.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so when they created this Constitution, it superseded all laws. In other words, the concept of a monarchy, the concept that a sovereign had the sovereignty over all of us, was wiped away. This created an enumerated government, a government that only had very specific powers. One of the best citations in the ratification debates that helped clarify the contrast between the laws of England and the laws under this new constitution. And this is what George Nicholas said, and you'll find this on June 10th, 1787. And this was all about the disputes between the people and government. And this is what he says. In England, in all disputes between the king and the people, reference is had to the enumerated rights of the people to determine, are the rights in dispute secured? Are they included in the Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights, or what, et cetera? Now, just to be clear here, what they're doing in this concept under the monarchy is, do you have restrictions upon the king for him to not to be able to do these things, take away your freedom of speech, take away your this or this? And this is how he goes on and says, so are the rights in dispute secured? Are they protected, is what, in other words, by the Bill of Rights, the Magna Carta, etc.? If not, they are generally speaking within the king's prerogative. In disputes between Congress and the people, the reverse of the proposition holds. Is the disputed right enumerated? In other words, can Congress create a law that is not enumerated within the Constitution or not in pursuant to the enumerated powers? And then he goes on and says, if not, Congress cannot meddle with it. They can't create a power for the Environmental Protection Agency that had to be delegated. So as we go on, you have to understand that we no longer have a general government that has general powers. We have a limited and defined general government that is based upon the enumerated powers within this Constitution. This is the huge shift. And this all was begotten from this shadow government that evolved into a legitimate government that was representative in this new form of republicanism, where we had the sovereignty of the people and the sovereignty of the people's government. When we say the people's government, truly the people's government in today's era is the county. Because the people's government, that is the government that should have most of the effect and most of the focus of our everyday lives. All other governments are general governments, whether it be the state or whether it be the federal government, that only has very specific and limited roles and responsibilities in providing for the people. Most all of your government and all of the power of government has been perverted and taken away from you and your local government and has been moved to Washington, D.C. or to your state capital. And it has all been working against you, and that is an illegitimate form of government because the mechanisms and the ways they have done this have not been delegated, nor have they been founded or in pursuant to the laws of the constitutions. And when I say constitutions, I mean the state constitution as well as the U.S. Constitution. And more importantly, as we started realizing over the past 100 years that things aren't necessarily right, as we started exposing this conspiracy theory that stems back to post-Civil War, we start recognizing, because there were bad behavior by the government prior to the Civil War, but the government actually started initiating an insurrection against the Constitution post-Civil War. And many people didn't know. As a matter of fact, it wasn't public knowledge. And as a matter of fact, the Organic Act and some of these other acts that they passed, that they started doing things, had no direct impact upon the people until much later as these things matured and baked into this government. Now, that's how Satan works. And as I was talking to Paul, because we had a conversation after he, you know, wanted to help expound upon these assemblies, is what they call themselves, that, you know, he's working with. I'm working with others that call themselves committees of safety, and that these are good people. Now, some of these are going down this path of behaving and acting in such a way that they put themselves in jeopardy, where they are actually declaring themselves no longer property of the state and no longer a citizen of the United States, because apparently being a U.S. citizen is bad based on the illegitimate government. The key thing, folks, is that it is illegitimate. We'll get to this. So as they move forward, you know, there were several attempts, and we've proven these things, that in 1817, Congress tried to create a Department of Transportation. Madison, then later Monroe, then later Andrew Jackson, all three presidents vetoed Congress's attempts in trying to create the footings, just the footings, for a Department of Transportation. It's not like they were actually trying to erect the Department of Transportation at that point in time. They were just trying to give themselves a few powers of creating and improving highways, waterways, and so forth amongst the states. And all three presidents said, you don't have that authority within this Constitution, that we have to amend the Constitution to do that. So that right there, folks, if you watch that one video on our YouTube channel, the three presidential vetoes of the Department of Transportation, DOT, then you will actually understand and you'll start to get this concept that the only way they can do something that is not enumerated within the Constitution must happen under an amendment to the Constitution. Or if the government does something that is not enumerated, and we discover, hey, you never had the authority to do this, you must cease and desist. Ah, that means that what they've done is illegitimate and fraudulent. It is fraudulent. They do not have the authority to do these things. If they're taking money from you for these things, they are defrauding you. We have, and this is why I've said this before, there are lots of people that are really, really upset. I am telling you, we have to correct the course. We have, our responsibility is cleaning up the mess of the child. We don't go and grab the child and beat it to death, because then we no longer have the government that was created. We still need that child government to perform the very specific functions it is supposed to perform. So we can't, you know, it's like cutting off your nose to spite your face. It's like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. There's all sorts of little adages that kind of help metaphorically describe the importance and the symbiotic importance of the relationships that we have as a union, as well as a relationship within the union, within the states, the intrastate, and so forth. As we go interstate and intrastate, we can start realizing that we have a huge job. And I'm telling you that the job is not as complicated as you really think. It is the simplicity of a compact. Do they have the authority to do this? No, if they don't, then they cease and desist, and we start cleaning things up. There's going to be millions of people. When I say millions, I don't mean half the population. There's going to be probably 5, 10, maybe 15, 20 million people that are going to be upset because they're not going to be getting the retirement that's due them, because they're doing work that is fraudulent work, and the retirement and everything created for them to do these things is fraudulent. Do they continue to make that? Now, they, if they didn't understand, ignorance, you know, is no excuse in the eyes of the law. And so we have to be very sympathetic. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to be hurting from this, but we have to rip the bandage off, or we have to surrender our liberties, bow our heads to an evil empire, and be subjugated. It is your choice, America. It is your choice. Are you going to do the right thing and take a stand, or are you going to accept the I guess, the success of co-opting and basically, what's the best word, deceit, duplicity. There's all sorts of these different words, but are we going to accept the fact that they have outright stolen, illegitimately stolen, and fraudulently stolen our birthright and everything that comes with our birthrights? I'm telling you, folks, we can't accept this. We cannot. There's going to be people. There will be people that will take the ultimate stand. And I'm with you on this. We have to take the ultimate stand. And I'm telling you, we'll be right back after this.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
You see, I had to chuckle because I almost bled into the hard break. When we're looking at this master plan of deceit, you have to start recognizing the architect behind all of this. And as a matter of fact, it has gotten so much. So it's not just black and white. There are all of these different shades of black that we call gray. It's just applying a little bit of black to some white. That's all gray is. It's just a little bit of black. And a little more black and a little more black as we slowly graduate from white to black. And so when we look at, you know, the architect, one has to acknowledge that Satan not only wanted to create, you know, this contrast, or, you know, obviously the contrast was very evident, black and white, that he needed to disguise himself in grays. And the best way to do that, because obviously his plan, the black plan, the evil plan, the dark plan of subjugating all of mankind was out there. And he got people to actually commit themselves to that plan. It is advanced to a point that it is right in our face. Global communism is his plan. Subjugation, compulsion, slavery, those are the, you know, Satan's plan. That is the end. That is where they want to take us. And so they have to use these ruses and duplicities. And so in my conversation with Paul, I started thinking about, you know, if I was Satan, how would I, because he knows who the enemy is. He knows that he just can't combat us with, you know, the black side. You know, it can't be just a black and white battle. He has to throw a lot of gray at us. And these assemblies are grays. These are not white. The source of these things are not, because they're rooted in American history, and people look and go, wow, they were instrumental in what some people are claiming in taking back America or taking back our liberties or what have you. And technically, what this is a huge ruse to get good patriots to buy into something, to remove them from the fight. If you walk away from your marriage, do you have any right to fix your marriage anymore? In other words, all of the people that are getting involved in these assemblies and these efforts to move away from, getting involved in a shadow government and moving away from the U.S. Constitution and declaring yourself no longer a citizen, to taking back your property rights as an individual sovereign. In other words, going down this path of what the assemblies and these sovereign citizen movements are talking about. And so it begs that I get into this, so let me go ahead and get into this. Because this is what Paul sent me. He sent me, you know, that this is their fundamental foundation. And he talks about, you know, Cornwall or Cornwallis and Washington and this huge, I'll just say, this huge struggle here in America, this holy war that will be waged for a very long time that will ultimately prove that the United States has been subjugated to Britain. And what has happened is we have had people in our government that have done that illegitimately, but over the course of time, people in our government have done that. And they point to Title 26. And what I want to do is I just want to kind of go through this, because if you look at the statute and we talk about this, and when you look at when Title 26 was implemented, yeah, I've told you about the titles. I've told you about these laws that the government has created. Remember, they have exclusive legislation over the District of Columbia only and their territories. They have no exclusive legislation over the U.S. Constitution, nor do they have any exclusive legislation over the states and the United States. To be very, very clear, folks, the only time that they have the ability to legislate for the United States and the U.S. Constitution is when they are acting within the enumerated powers. This is the critical message. This is why I started off with that George Nicholas citation. And so this is what the statute says. This is hereby imposed on the transfer of property by a citizen or resident of the United States, or by a domestic corporation or partnership, or by an estate or trust which is not a foreign estate or trust, to a foreign corporation as paid in surplus or as contribution to capital, or to a foreign estate or trust, or to a foreign partnership, an excise tax equal to 35% of the excess thereof. Then they talk about the fair market value, the sum of, the adjusted basis, the amount of gain organized, and so forth. But this is bottom line. When you look at the origins of all of these things, and all of these things started coming after the Organic Act of 1871, informing the corporations. Did the federal government have the enumerated power to create these government corporations? Absolutely not. Did the federal government have the authority to basically impose these types of laws? Now, what they did do is they passed this thing called the 16th Amendment. But the 16th Amendment did not give them the power to be able to spend money or use money any way they want. It only gave them the authority to actually add a new form of tax, which was a personal income tax or a direct income tax, and that was derived on the persons. They still had no authority over corporations. Corporations were state institutions. Ah, but they had already started pulling corporations in as the United States started incorporating. So they, all of these things from corporations and from the this taxation, all of these things were done without the authority. The 16th Amendment didn't give them any more authority to spend money on things they had no authority to spend money on. It may be a part of the Constitution, but it is not the real threat. The real threat is believing that what they're doing is is genuine. What they're doing is actually built upon their powers. If it is not enumerated, they can't meddle with it. So everything that they're doing is, all of these things that these assemblies, these committees of safety are fighting, all of these things are illegitimate. If you've ever heard me talk about, if you have ever heard me talk about Ron Paul and how deceptive he was in talking about auditing the Fed, I know many people out there go, yeah, we've got to audit the Fed. Why? It is illegitimate. Auditing the Fed only legitimizes it, folks. We got to stop thinking about, you know, accepting things. We have to challenge the veracity and say, you have no authority. We never delegated that power to you. You did this without the authority to do so. Every loan, every debt that they take on to spend money on things they have no authority to do is fraudulent. Every dollar that you see on that debt clock, and you look at all of the money that they're spending on things they have no authority to spend, then you will realize the grand facade. You will realize the grand illusion they have created, because they do not have the authority to do 90%+ of the things that they are doing in our everyday lives. It is the magnitude of government overreach is at that level here in the United States. And I know that there's a lot of people that are starting to recognize this. Because here's the thing. Prove me wrong. Prove to me that the federal government had the authority to actually create this Organic Act. And what they did was in pursuant to the Constitution. Prove to me that they had the authority to declare martial law as defined by the Constitution. Within, and when I say by the Constitution, things that were defined by the Constitution are those things that were defined during the ratification debates. Those are the further definitions and terms of the U.S. Constitution. And so when they stipulated things within the ratification debates, those things became definitions and or terms, limitations on the federal government or on the execution of powers. The fact is, folks, that we have been living in a world that we have to challenge. We can no longer accept all of these things. So this is why, you know, it takes a person a long time to really start changing. Because I mean, I know there's some people that, you know, can see, wow, a lot of this stuff is just illegitimate. And every time they go about and they try to attack it, they attack it at the level of legitimacy. In other words, they're attacking it at the fact that it is legitimate. You know, like taking it to court. You know, why would a person walk into court against the government doing something that is illegitimate? Why would you walk into them, you know, into court over something? I mean, it's one thing if they're directly violating something, you call them out on it. But why would you say, you know, we're challenging what you did instead of where the authority came to do it? We'll be right back.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services.
AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me be very specific. When we look at something that is happening, and let's get down to the enumerated roles, responsibilities, powers, and properties. And the enumerated properties is something that is really stark contrast. It's right there in black and white. The federal government has only these enumerated properties that they can possess, right? That is, you know, magazines, forts, shipyards, so forth. Those very few types of installations and or build or necessary buildings, that's it. Needful or necessary buildings for them to do their job. So when they come out and they've, you know, over time, they've expanded themselves to, you know, to consume the majority of the states for environmental purposes or what have you. So everybody looks and goes, we know they don't have the authority to operate these Indian reservations, to operate these forests, these public parks, all of these things. I mean, there's a... There's millions and millions and millions, if not billions, of acres of U.S. property that the federal government is taking full control of that they have no authority. Now, I don't know about billions. I really don't know how many acres it is, the total, but it is massive, folks. Most people look at a map. If you go look at a map to actually lay out how much federal control over the western states, it is the majority. 70% of most all of the states is claimed as federal property. And everybody goes, how is this possible? Well, it's not. It's not possible within the Constitution. So the problem is, folks, that as long as they continue to live this lie and done and done and done and done and done, nowadays, most people, they go straight to court. They say, you don't have the authority. And they walk right into a federal court, and they basically allow, because every time you step into a court, especially a court that has no jurisdiction, when it comes to a federal park, the federal court system has no jurisdiction over this. All you have to do is go to the state court and prove that the federal government has never received and has been granted the authority to possess property for park purposes or for forest purposes or for people purposes like Indian reservations. Are you kidding me? Show me in the Constitution where these powers were specifically delegated or this property was delegated to allow them to seize state property. And you win the case in the state court. Never again do you get dragged into a federal court because the state then has sovereignty. However, the problem is even bigger because what you're doing is you're trying to use the court system to nullify unconstitutional assertions. This is why we have gone over and over and over, and this is the whole crux of everything. It is interposition. The process is interposition. And the process is petitioning. We first have to call them out and use petitions and use the legal constitutional argument that they have no authority. See, many states have become the whipping post for the federal government, but the majority of all of these states, or the majority of all of the problems that we are dealing with, all stem from the federal government. The federal government has only concocted and or co-opted states to become their whipping post. If I go a little further, this is some of the justification that is kind of had, because this is what was given to me from Paul. For those that study Title 26, you will recognize IMF, which means the individual master file. All taxpayers have one. To read one, you have to be able to break their codes using file 6209, which is about 467 pages on your IMF, and you'll find a blocking series which tells you what type of tax you are paying. You will probably find a 300 to 399 block series, which 6209 says is reserved. You then look up the BMF 300 to 399, which is the business master file in 6209. You will have seen prior to 1991, this was a U.S. UK tax claims non-refile DLN. And so they're getting into all of the technical terms of when you start reading into these things of how they're doing this. Folks, the whole point is that none of this was done legitimately. None of this was done legitimately. And what they're basically telling you is that you have to use British law to break this unconstitutional law in the United States. And I'm telling you, folks, no. You have to challenge the constitutionality that they have no power and authority to do these things, to levy these things upon us. You know, and I'm getting back to this master plan. Satan wants to distract you. Satan wants to divide you. He wants you to start going down. He wants to get you off the course of challenging the veracity of his claim, to challenge the veracity of his authority. He wants you to actually go down a worthless cause, go down a rat hole, and make you feel like you've done okay. Getting these people to say, I am no longer a U.S. citizen. I am not liable by the laws of the United States. And it only puts you into a vulnerability to be removed and deported, and you'll become a man with no land and no country. Because technically, the land that you think you own, you don't even own that, because they've already unconstitutionally subverted your lands and titles. That you really don't own your land when technically you do, because they don't have the authority to take and to marginalize, or all of the things that they have done to make it so that you really don't own your own land has all been done unconstitutionally, without the authority. When we start peeling it all back, where did they have the authority to basically regulate out to the states that no U.S. citizen could possess their land that they owned? The reality is they had no authority to do that. Show me in the Constitution where that power was delegated. And you want to shut these people up. You want to silence the arguments. You only have to ask that one simple question. Show me in the Constitution where they had the authority to do this one thing. Show me in the Constitution where they had the authority to pass and place the Organic Acts of 1781 upon the states. They don't. They may be doing it, but they don't have the authority in what they do. And this goes back to, well, what do we do about it? We must interpose. And today, we just can't go one person and interpose. We have to become a collective conscience. We have to work together in using the exact same petitions or petitions that have the same intent. They don't have to be identical. If you really want to make your own change, you can. I try to explain this to people many people do not understand the First Amendment petition. It doesn't have to be perfect. All you have to do is make the legal argument and make it irrefutable. Prove to me, as a public servant, as a government, where the authority came to actually exercise this power. Where in the Constitution is this rooted? If it is not enumerated, then it can't be done. Now, it can be done in Washington, D.C., but it can't be done and applied to the union. And that's the simplicity of this, folks. This is why I go back to the citation that I read to you at the very beginning. In England, in all disputes between the king and people, recurrence is had to the enumerated rights of the people to determine, are the rights in dispute secured? Are they included in the Magna Carta Bill of Rights or what have you? In other words, are these things reserved and taken from the king and reserved for the people? If not, they are generally speaking within the king's prerogative, or in our case, the government's prerogative. No. In disputes between Congress and the people, the reverse of the proposition holds. Is the disputed right enumerated? If not, they can't meddle with it. That means your state government, your county government, no government, even if the federal government says, come in and you will enforce this, we're going to give you money and you must enforce this. If it is not enumerated, they can't do it. They may take the money and they may be held, and the government may come down and say, you took this money and you have to do this by law. And if you don't, then we're going to throw you in jail. Folks, that the law that they're enforcing is the color of law, and the jail that they're imposing is a tyrannical jail. It is not a legitimate legal jail. And we have to shut down their jails. I mean, it's one thing that we have criminal jails, but when we have these legal jails, when we have this legal threat of depriving you of, and this goes down to the Constitution, that we shall not be deprived our private property or our lives or anything, that we cannot be, deprived of these things. And then they say without just compensation. But folks, I'm going to get into that more, because that has to do with the Fifth Amendment, right? Because this seizure of property, but when we look at the due process, that there has to be some process and some lines. And we're getting into all of this, but don't buy into the facade anymore. Challenge it. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.